Testing, 1, 2.
All right, right on. Well, we're here. We're at the end. First of all, I want to thank all the senior students and sensei for those wonderful talks. And it's amazing how all the talks really spoke to the theme. And I don't know if you guys collaborated or not, but it was wonderful to see the one mind, the one body at work. So again, thank you so much. I look back when we first, in the early days of this center, and I don't mean this as an ego trip, but I often wonder how I was able to work 40 hours a week and give a talk every Sunday and hold interviews. I don't think I could do that now. So I am really, really grateful for you guys. So thank you. I want to raise a question. And the question has to do with the basic problem that we face in sitting. And it's a problem or problems that come about regardless as to the length of time you've been sitting. So it doesn't matter whether you're new at this or you've been doing it for some time. And what might be that problem or problems? Well, one is that we have to face our fears. And most of what we fear is psychological. There are no saber-toothed tigers out there, even though they've just found some new fossils. Where was that, Hongo? It was on the news the other day. They found these new fossils in an unlikely place. It was in the mountains or something. So the fear is psychological. We don't want to look bad. We don't want to look stupid. We don't want to be taken over by another person. Confusion. Doubts. And this is natural. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 or more times. You've got to go to the dark side before you can go to the light. We have to learn everything possible about ourselves. And that is of value. And it doesn't matter if the vehicle is either shikantaza, following our breath, or sitting with a koan. We're all working on the same issue. Who am I? What is my life? I love Joko Beck, and we read, thanks to Shoki, we read her book during an Ango period. And one of the things she writes is that in sitting, we are uncovering reality. It's what I call the real reality. And what is it? Buddha nature? True nature? Or big mind? Or whole body. So we're talking about the self that exists before the ego takes over and creates subject and object, self and others. So even though we assign a name to this self, big mind, whole body, Buddha nature, we can't measure it. We can't define it. We can't pin it down or see what it is. It's immeasurable. It's boundless and infinite. Yet it's what we are. Over the years, I've said repeatedly, we're the only show in town. In the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, the Buddha tells us that the Buddha never, ever truly dies or becomes destroyed. Obliteration or extinction of his innermost being is an utter impossibility. Only his physical form passes away. That's true for the Buddha. That's true for us. I was talking with someone in an interview earlier today, and we made mention that the Buddha said, I, he used the pronoun. That is a pronoun, right? Mm-hmm. I have to check with my English cohorts here. Yeah. When he used that I, he wasn't talking specifically about himself. He was talking about all of us. He was saying that within all beings there exists the Buddha Dhatu, or the Buddha element, the Buddha principle, the Buddha sphere. The Buddha Dhatu is the utterly pure, unconditional, indestructible, steadfast, and unshakable eternal Buddha essence of all sentient beings. It's the life force, the nurturing power within us which sustains us. When fully realized, and it can transform us into a Buddha. It's the true self. That's what I was talking about last night during the precept ceremony. That's what Dogen talks about when he says to lose the self is to find the self. He's talking about this great self. The self that's complete within all of us. It's hidden deep inside, removed from worldly sight. So perception of this inner Tathagata, another name, Tathagatagarbha, is attained by clearing away all the klishas. And what are the klishas? Negative mental states and tendencies, such as greed, anger, ignorance. And what is ignorance? I don't mean in the traditional English sense, stupid. No, it's avoidance. It's what we avoid in life. Don't want to go to the dark side. I just want to be in the light. jealousy, pride. So the eradication of these problematic behaviors is what we have to work with. And we're not going to get rid of them. That's a delusion. As I was saying to someone, and I'm surely dating myself, but we were talking about Carlos Castaneda's writings, and one of his teacher, Don Juan, they were in a diner somewhere in Mexico, and Don Juan started moving the condiments from the center of the table to the edge of the table. See? And he was making the point that this negativity doesn't totally dissipate. It just moves from center stage. See? But it's there. And that ties into something that was said the other day by one of the folks giving the talk. And that has to do with us learning to be compassionate with ourselves, to accept that negativity, because it's like one of my favorite classical westerns, the good, the bad, and the ugly. How many times have I said it's okay to be delusional if you know, as long as you know that you're delusional? And what is the major delusion? To see self where there is, in fact, non-self. And to see non-self where there is, in reality, the self, the external, unconditional Buddha. The self that's real and lasting. And to go back to the point that's been made this week, to realize our Buddha Dhatu, our awakening mind, we must cultivate what? Buddha Citta. A quality of intention or motivation. See, everybody pretty much made the point that it is the principal seed that creates the fruit of Buddhahood. And bodhicitta has three significant components. First, the deep and expansive quality of compassion that recognizes the suffering of others and the need to take responsibility for its alleviation. Second is the vision of wholeness that recognizes that we each have the potential to benefit others in ways that are inconceivable in our limited ordinary state. It is the vision of Buddhahood that also enables us to cope with the potentially overwhelming depth of distress and suffering present in the world. Third, it is the factor of quality of will, and I might add volition, that is able to take on the task. And where does our journey towards awakening mind begin? No other place than right here on the cushion, where we face our fears and insecurities. And as one master put it, where we discovered gold buried in mud. The Diamond Sutra says the past is ungraspable, the present is ungraspable, the future is ungraspable. So where are we? We can't say the present. There's nothing we can point to. All we can do is pay attention to the totality of what is happening right now. And in order to do this, we have to give up filtering reality through our dreams of what's happening, what happened in the past, and what will happen in the future. So the crux of sitting, in the words of Joko Beck, is this. We must constantly create a little shift from the spinning world we got in our heads to what reality is. You see, we're already the Buddha. And of course, the point is to realize what that means. Total oneness, harmony, and the ability to express awakening mind in our lives. Nagarjuna, in his commentary on the awakening mind, states that this awakening mind is the highest ideal in the great vehicle. So with an absorbed, determined effort, that's what generates this awakening mind. Practice is endless. Takes guts. And it takes a real devotion to ourselves and to others. It is said that a person who for an instant meditates on the awakening mind, that the heap of merit attained from this, not even the conquerors can measure. This practice, and you've heard me say it many times, will transform our life, but not by anything we think or figure out, but by us giving up our ego-centered dreams of reality for who we really are, the Buddha. And let me close with this. In the words of Dogen, enlightenment is intimacy with all things.